Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. Everyone's been asking me where my guy that I love, that gives me so much insight and is so brilliant, has been. It's been a little while, but he's been busy everywhere. He's been working, he's been traveling, he's been trying to save the planet. Thank you for joining me, Matt Arett.
Always a pleasure, Mel Kay.
Thank you, sir. This is going to be a little condensed show. Matt will come back next week for a little more in-depth, but I wanted to jump in while I had him to kind of ask Matt Arett. So what are you seeing? Planet chaos is spinning out of control, it seems, but you have a perspective on where we are. So why don't you fill in my audience on what you're thinking these days? Is that really happening?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, we only have maybe 30 minutes or so. So as people will notice, I'm going to try to condense and brush over things a little bit just to give a thumbnail sketch. The way I've been, I tend to look at the world, and I try to encourage other people to try this out, is to sort of evaluate our past from the standpoint of a clash between two different ways of organizing humanity, defining what human nature is, what God that made us in his image is. Which is, on the one hand, whether or not you think about human beings being a creature made in the image of God, capable of discovering creation, transforming our quality of life by new discoveries that we make into science through technological progress, or whether you don't think that and you think that we're made in the image of mud to be manipulated by a masterclass of self-professed gods, will define very different ways of managing economic systems, political systems. So one could be considered kind of like a closed system. I've written books with this theme of closed versus open systems. Right. And, you know, the Malthusian idea, Thomas Malthus being the high priest of the British Empire, is the sort of mathematician who was working for the British East India Company during the time a little bit after the American Revolution, where he came up with this great scientific idea that human population growth always has to be managed by a master class who would be informed by mathematical scientific standards, like the growth functions of agriculture, which he said always will grow arithmetically, whereas human population growth grows geometrically. And so you could always forecast the future and act preventatively on those future crises, right? According to him and his mathematical high priests, who are really anti-human, by capping or doing things like encouraging wars, famines, disease, other things to keep the population low before that crisis moment hits, when a population supersedes the ability of the Earth's bounty to sustain ourselves. Now, in Malthus's world, he made no consideration for human creativity, for real technological progress. It wasn't part of his equation, because he's a mathematician. You can't weigh or mathematically plot or chart or model creativity or justice or the soul, right? It means nothing for these creeps. The other school, which was the school that he was assigned to undermine, emerged out of especially the American Revolution. And the American Revolution, when you read Benjamin Franklin's his essays on population, on the necessary increase of mankind in 1751, or his many writings on the importance of building a society that would always allow for more and more of the people to participate in the growth of that society by encouraging and incentivizing discoveries and inventions. So, you know, he patented something like 800 discoveries or inventions that he came up with as a scientist. He wasn't just a tinkerer, as he's often portrayed. You know, this guy was a leading scientist. He discovered the nature of electricity. He was able to supersede, with no university education, all of the greatest scientists of all over Europe and all over the world. He was able to do what nobody could do, because he had something as far as a love of truth and a playful experimentation that was lacking in the arrogant academia of the world that he lived in. But for him, it was always tied to the necessity of his discovery was always tied, which was made 20 years before the American Revolution,
right,
to the proof of principle that he wanted to bring into line. Because he was like, there's nothing special about me, Benjamin Franklin, right? I'm not born from a special noble family. There's nothing specifically magnificent about me genetically. but yet I could do this thing. I could discover a law of the universe and then share it with mankind. And other people can do the same thing too, but they can't if they live under a system of exploitation and feudalism and slavery, which is what the British Empire always demanded of the system that they wanted to manage. So that's where the idea of the Republic and creating a different type of government based on the rejection of feudalism and made and for the defense of the common good, that's where that idea was inexorably tied to what he was doing scientifically. So I always try to encourage people to look at the world between as a clash between this open system dynamic that calls for always bringing out the best in us and always leaping outside of the limits to growth. Or versus this closed system dynamic that wants to always keep us in a little box under some feudal lord and their elite class of bloodlines to be managed and depopulated, right? It's a two very different systems. So from that standpoint, everything you could see with the story of what JFK was doing, his quality of thinking, both for Africa as well as for America, as well as for space, it becomes a very different story when you recognize that the agencies that killed him and that undid all of the projects that he had for creating an African industrial renaissance with Kwame Nkrumah, right, who was the president of Ghana and the first foreign head of state to come to America when JFK was elected. The first foreign head of state wasn't some European leader. It was an African, a leader of the Pan-African movement, who himself was a lover of his people. He wanted, he understood, and he Kwame Nkrumah had studied in America in the 1940s and was very, very, for years, was studying how did America go from a backwards Tennessee Valley southern zone, right, with floods, droughts, low life expectancy, high illiteracy, low quality of life. How did they take that from the 20s and early 30s and become an industrial aerospace powerhouse with hydroelectric dams, water control, flood control, mass education? So the illiteracy, because of the New Deal that Kwame Nkrumah was a student studying, went from something like some crazy, something like 70% illiteracy in 1932 to, by the time it was 1950, it was something like 90% literacy, only 10% illiteracy. And again, it was an industrial powerhouse. And he was thinking with other Pan-African leaders, how do we bring this to Africa as an example of a New Deal for Africa, which JFK worked very hard against the depopulation lobby around JP Morgan steel combines, who never wanted to make money working with Africans because they could have made a lot of money. And JFK was trying to explain to them, like, hey, if you work with these African leaders, you will make a ton of money. They want to build all of this, and they didn't want to do it. And he had to force.
We had on your friend, Lawrence Freeman, was on here talking just about that. And I'm really glad, because I was going to keep this for the next show, but I'm glad you went to Africa, because nobody is talking about what's going on in Africa. And I figured you would know. It's a pretty big deal what's happening in Niger and all over there. And I haven't seen it on any news, barely any podcasts. Can you please tell my audience what is going on in Africa and why it matters?
It matters a lot. Yeah, you're totally on my wavelength. That's sort of the stage.
That's
I was
why
sitting.
I miss you. We got to get back in the groove.
Absolutely. I mean, like this, it's true. A lot of the best American oriented alternative media podcasts are not really quite looking at this, and I don't know why. Because it's so important, and you have, I mean, if people might know it, they know it only indirectly, but there was a coup in Niger. It was a French colony for a long time. And even to this very day, Niger gained, like many African nations, political independence in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. There was political independence, but never economic independence. So if you look at it, their poverty rates are amongst the highest of all of the African countries, right up there with the Central African Republic. Infant mortality is insane. And most people, something like 8 out of 9 people, don't even have electricity. However, Niger has the most uranium, or some of the highest rates and quality of uranium in the world, which supplies like 1 out of 3 light bulbs in France with electrical power, cheap, abundant nuclear fuel, which France has 70% of their energy basket is nuclear. But Niger was never allowed to benefit from those resources or develop the type of energy systems that would allow them to end the poverty that was otherwise deemed needed by the oligarchical elite that wants to keep them fighting each other and poor and starving and dead in order to better exploit their what's under their land and maybe a little bit of their brute human labor force as human bulls to like be like, you know, maybe in a mine doing some of the grunt work with, again, huge, huge death for young people, children who have to work in mines as children. So, and this is what's known as France-Afrique. So the France-Afrique is all of the former French colonies, which still have the French private bankers controlling their currencies, controlling their corporations, which manage their economies, and training and installing their puppet leaders right. as fake leaders, but always loyal to agencies in London, in Paris, in Wall Street. So that's been overthrown. They actually had, they're the sixth country within
three or four years. Seems like a really big deal.
Yeah, so big.
Explain what happened and what the implications are, because it does appear that China and Russia have been down in Africa a lot, while the Western nations that are all with NATO are getting kicked out. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, there's something interesting. So I don't know all of the details. There's things that still, I mean, I can't know what some of the elements of what went on behind the scenes, but certainly President Bazoum, who was the ousted dictator, they actually called him the greatest representative of democracy in Africa, right. says the Biden administration. But this guy was a complete whore. He was ousted by a military junta that actually represents the will of the people. The vast majority of people of Niger desired this. But this has then created an interesting, it brought a lot of pus to the surface. So on the one hand, the French military bases, the U.S. military bases have had to shut down in Niger. That shows you a little bit, well, that's pretty good. Because, I mean, the U.S. and French military, especially the U.S. military, is vastly active all over Africa. There's so many U.S. military bases keeping control of the entire region, partially also for supporting insurrectionist groups. Mali, you know, in Mali, you have things like Boko Haram, which is an offshoot of Al-Qaeda, which has been used just like Al-Qaeda in the Middle East by the CIA, by the Pentagon, as a weaponized agency to overthrow governments you don't like. That's what we did for Gaddafi. That's how we killed him, was using a grouping of Libyan Al-Qaeda operatives that we tried to do the same thing with Syria, with the Jabhat al-Nusra. And then later on ISIS, which are, again, there's been proof that British and American military intelligence have been supporting these groups in order to overthrow the government. We've been doing this all over Africa, too. So these U.S. military bases are not conventional military. They're PSYOPs, black operations as well. Point being is Mali and Burkina Faso both also went through military coups, and they signed a military pact with the new government of Niger saying if you are attacked by anybody from within Africa or from France or American forces overseas, we will see this as a collective security pact, which has now resulted in Niger, a weak country, not standing alone, which is good. So since then, there's this, when I said the pus is coming to the surface, there's the economic community of West African states, which represents seven West African countries, mostly under puppet regimes, but they're very nervous. Now, Nigeria, not Niger, but Nigeria, their president said, no, we have to go in militarily to reinstate the proper democratic leader. But now the reason why he said that is because he's nervous as all sin that he has earned like 76% of the people of Nigeria support the Niger coup and also would support seeing a coup in Nigeria as well to oust this whore for Western bankers. Right. Now, recently,
and we saw last week the queen of the her and power, I think, are equally the queens of regime change and color revolution. Victoria Nuland went in there to try to restore power and they kicked her right out. And I'm very happy about that, because I think that this is a good thing for the world. And I really do believe that, because we've talked here before about the truth about Africa is with when it comes to the IMF, the World Bank, National Endowment for Democracy, all the things you're talking about, is that there really is no reason that there's not clean water, clean air. You know, Lawrence has been working on a dam for decades. There's no reason that the barren desert of Israel is flowing with trees and cattle and everything. And Africa's like that. It really has been on purpose, but Africa's population is going to explode way beyond anywhere else. And there's really nothing Bill Gates and his friends can do about it. So this seems like the time that, you know, somewhat biblically, it needs to change, or it's just going to be a disaster.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, like the what you just said is so true. Like the youth, there's going to be over 2 billion people living in Africa by 2050. And most of the people, I mean, there's something like, what are the numbers here? It's something like 60% of the population is under 30. I mean, it's the youth, the youth energy is so big. Like this is, if you can get real, honest, authentic development, not the kind of development that we've been saying we've been giving Africa in the form of you know, US aid loans or IMF or World Bank loans. Not, that was always designed to keep them usuriously debt slaved and ever more poor. That's not real development. Or like microcredit. Here's a crap lie for everybody. Microcredit. You know what microcredit is?
No.
It's insane. It was cooked up by Maurice Strong back in the 60s. And the idea was, instead of going for state to state big loans to build things like what JFK was doing and we were formerly doing in Canada with Diefenbaker helping, you know, Pakistan and India develop a nuclear power sector in the 60s. Instead of those types of loans to do things, we're going to now reduce that. And now we're going to replace that with giving micro loans or micro credit to local, you know, so we'll allow like a local tribe in this part of Sudan to get a few hundred dollars to build a well. And then we'll do that a few hundred times. So we'll have a few hundred wells
without a system that connects on a bigger project. Exactly. Yeah. I mean,
we don't have to build the big dam project that we were formerly going to build. So now we can, and everybody becomes dependent upon, or let's say a little micro credit loan, like they have in South Africa to build a little business that could make solar panels. And you could hire maybe six people in your little local shitty solar power panel photovoltaic cell company, and you'll make a little bit of money. Everybody's going to make a little money. It's better than being dead. But
keeps you dead. It doesn't do anything. And then, like we've talked about on the show before with you, the other thing about that is the debt slavery model, because when they don't pay back their loans, then the IMF says, well, then all your natural resources are ours. And again and again and again. And here we are at a place, too, where, Matt, when you're talking about this, what I see is also Russia and China are going in there to kind of help them. Belt and Road Initiative, obviously, down there. The Americans aren't doing anything, it doesn't seem, that's productive. You know, it does also lead back to Gaddafi wanted an African Union and an African currency and all of that. So they took him out. Now we're 20 years later. The truth of the matter is, if we had good leadership, we would be not only investing in all kinds of things for Africa to advance, to have all the electricity, but it's a huge consumer market that we're keeping down, because if we were giving them the technology, the education, the agriculture, all the things we know we have that we don't need to invest in the IMF and the Davos crew to get, it already exists. If we were helping the African nations evolve, that's a huge financial also market that's untapped at this moment that could really make the future better for everyone, right?
Yeah, it seems like a no-brainer, right? Like, don't kill your customers and you'll make better business. What a great thought. And it's like we're so out of whack with common sense business. Like, we used to understand this before you and I were even born. I guess this is more of a common thing that from our studies of research of history, that's the way that America became good in the first place, was doing honest business. And it's, and people often have problems with me because I will speak well of China's Belt and Road Initiative in Africa or Russia in Africa, because both of these, Russia and China,
smart. I mean, you can speak however you want. The truth of the matter is, it is smart, and we're not doing anything.
Yeah, it's like, no, they're like, oh, you think that China is an angel and they're doing everything just because? It's like, no, they're not being angelic. They obviously need resources. The difference is they're not killing their customers. It's common sense business. When you pay somebody for what they have and you make their make them more productive so that they will both consume what you produce. So, I mean, that would be great for America, American production, to have a consumer base in Africa of people who are like, you know, wanting to buy our goods. That's great. And we would also be able to buy better goods from them instead of just like exploiting cobalt or raw materials from under their ground. We could also. Not just not also, we don't have to do that. You can actually have finished goods made in a high quality way from the mines and production systems of Africans, if we permitted that, that could then we could buy back. Because we all have different talents that we could offer the world. And so China is training. People say, oh, but they're just doing debt trap diplomacy, says Joe Biden. No. I mean, if you actually look at the quality of the investments, they're building and integrating high-speed rail networks, as is currently underway, connecting the continent for the first time ever in common gauge rail, some standard gauge, some high-speed rail, like you have in Morocco. You got a 1,000-kilometer high-speed rail line being built up with Chinese firms helping out. You have in Addis Ababa to Djibouti in Ethiopia, which is where the great man-made Grand Renaissance Dam is being built. It's almost finished right now. That's going to supply vast amounts of energy to the Horn of Africa, where there's 240 million people living in abject poverty. That is going to be transformative. China's helping with that. Their only military agreement with Africa, unlike the hundreds of U.S. military bases at the moment, with Ethiopia, and specifically to defend Belt and Road connected projects. Because if you want to live in if you want to pay one of the highest insurance premiums on life insurance, become a Chinese rail engineer working in Africa, because these are the people who are being targeted for being murdered by the Boko Haram and other insurrectionary groups. They target and they kill the Chinese engineers working on the ground. And it's a huge death list, like very courageous people. And so the degree that they need to protect the infrastructure, but they're actually building infrastructure. They have a military agreement with Ethiopia. And there's rail lines. There's designs for the Africa Union 2063 agenda, which is very different from the UN, like the World Economic Forum 2030 agenda. And this is the thing, like there's they actually have coordinated, organized designs endorsed by Russia and by China. And also India is helping out in a certain way to build. There's designs for six different east-west rail lines connecting the continent and three north-south rail lines. The biggest one would be this one from Addis Ababa all the way up to, I think it's through the all the way into West Africa, forgetting the individual names of the countries, but it would definitely go up into Sudan, South Sudan, North Sudan, up into Egypt. That's already being built. The Chinese are helping Sudan upgrade their colonial rail that's fallen into disrepair. There's 5,000 kilometers of that unusable, but they're actually upgrading it, modernizing it. That will also connect up into Egypt and up more westward as well. So all of this is actually happening, and they're training engineers. Like, that's the difference. Unlike us, we would go down there, and if we did build infrastructure, it would be primarily for Barrick Gold or some other mineral cartel, and the infrastructure would be literally just to support the extraction of the elements from the ground, get them to port, and get them out of the country. Whereas in China, and we would never train engineers to be there to do things themselves. China has proven, and I've got the data sets.
I know
they've actually trained tens and tens of thousands of high quality engineers in Africa to be able to do the things that are being built and maintained and improved after they get their training. And that's now happening at a greater rate every day. So it's a very different way of thinking about self-interest that I would say is much more in alignment with the open system idea that the Malthusians despise, which is if you give people the means to fish, it's much better than just giving a few fish and making them dependent upon your little basket of fish. That's the way
JFK is the model, which is what they've been doing to keep control. You've talked about on here before. Also, we did another show earlier in our journey on Africa itself, but also on these IMF, World Bank loans and all of this. But it makes no sense at this point. You know, we're kind of at a place where on this, I believe that, you know, my country is captured personally, that we have a uniparty that is totally controlled by this globalist oligarch of billionaires that really are done with America, it appears to me. I don't think the people are. But again, somebody is choosing not to invest in Africa in a productive way that makes sense for the future, for not just us, but for Africa, but for the world. There's all those resources. There's no reason that those nations, and this is all we've talked about here on with you too, South America has a similar thing. Their resources should be their resources to build their nation, because their nation would be very wealthy. And we've done this. It should stop. What is standing in the way of private business, say American private industry, going in and doing what China's doing in Africa? Because it seems like it would benefit America, it would benefit Africa, and it would benefit the world to start being fair brokers with the African nations and we're being left out. And that's where I'm the most scared here, is that we're purposely not doing that, in my opinion. And they're leaving us out because I believe that the oligarch billionaire class that is destroying America on purpose wants us left out. Your thoughts on why we are not investing and doing our own thing in Africa that benefits the world, Africa, and ourselves? Oh, I hope you're enjoying the show. I was just talking on my new Patriot Mobile service. I have to tell you, I'm so excited. They are incredible. They are America first. They align with my values. And you know what? It's unlimited minutes, unlimited text, Wi-Fi calling, unlimited data, high speed, everything that you could use, just like everyone else. We have our time, we have our vote, and we have our money. And the great thing about Patriot Mobile is your service will be exactly the same. Difference with Patriot Mobile is they are an America First company. And what they do is they reinvest their money into causes that matter to me and matter to you and matter to this nation. At Patriot Mobile, those causes are the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, the Constitution, and our children's future. So please go to themelkayshow.com. Patriot Mobile is a partner of ours. Please use the code MELK. What I can tell you too is that they are supporting me and they are supporting creators because they believe in the First Amendment. They believe that censorship is wrong and they are going to put their money where their mouth is. Do what you can for the creators out there that are doing what I'm doing. Please go to Patriot Mobile, MELK Show. All I can say is thank you so much, guys. Supporting my partners supports me, and Patriot Mobile is absolutely awesome. I checked them out. We're switching to Patriot Mobile, and we hope you do too. Thank you so much.
Well, yeah, like even if we wanted to really compete with China in an authentic way, and I'm okay with that. If people want to actually compete with China, that's right. A good thing. Well, I'm not saying people should become like China at all. I'm just saying if they're doing good things, you know, try to like look at the good things and try to work with that instead of going to war, which is what other people want to do in the US military. However, if you want to compete with China, why not? Why not actually offer projects that will be more persuasive for Africans to want to trust you and work with you after years and years of backstabbing them, killing their leaders, overthrowing them in coups, instead of just stop that and offer real JFK inspired development projects that will make them much more reliable, loyal partners to us who they now trust again because we're helping them end poverty, end insecurity, end wars that have been plaguing them. Why not? Right. And we'll make a lot of money for our investors. People investing in those companies would. And we had an example of that in Canada back in, 2009, 2010. We had one of the biggest construction firms in Canada, SNC-Lavalin. And it's Montreal based. And they had a really robust foreign policy outlook that bypassed Ottawa. It bypassed the technocratic Malthusians trying to control the terms of Canadian official federal loans to poor countries, which are tied to the IMF. And instead they said to Gaddafi, hey, you want to build this great project? We'll help you. We can do it. And Gaddafi gave them the contract and they were building it. They had good teams on the ground, good engineers working with Gaddafi, taking all of that water that was under the Libyan desert in the Sahara and bringing it to the surface for a very well-organized desert reclamation. It would have made the desert bloom and create the basis, because there's a lot of fresh water all under the Sahara Desert. The Sahara Desert 5,000 years ago used to be a green oasis. I mean, we don't know geologically what the hell was going on in our solar system, for whatever reason caused all that water to go underground, but it did. Now the question is, do we wait another 10,000 years for it to come back, or can we do it as Gaddafi was doing it? You know, and or the Fertile Crescent, right, in Southwest Asia. It was called the Fertile Crescent. Today it's a desert. Why was it called a Fertile Crescent? Were they stupid? No, it was a Fertile Crescent. So,
well, that's why I always say to people, I think one of the biggest crimes our government has been behind is the takedown of Gaddafi. Because when you look back and look at his plans and what he was doing and how his people loved him and what he was doing for them, to me, of all the color revolutions, I look at the one with Gaddafi as the biggest war crime of them all. And all of those people are right now in power in D.C., or at least have usurped real power. You know, we got power, Samantha Power there. We got Newland. We got Blinken, Biden, Sullivan. You know, the Clintons are back there somewhere with the Obamas. It's really sad, but we can turn this around. I do feel like, honestly, this is a really big deal. And I think people in America need to start opening their eyes to our foreign policies that they don't talk about, which you talk about a lot. What would it look like for American industry to say, which is happening now. It seems that our Constitution and Bill of Rights, as you can tell right now with what's going on with Donald Trump and the DOJ and the Bidens, is moot at the moment. But what can individuals in America be doing and should they be doing when it comes to Africa? And what should they know that's really going on that, like you said, nobody's talking about it and we're going to be left out. And I really think the American people have to realize that there's a lot going on in Africa that we could and should be doing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily have all the answers for the tactical maneuvers that have to happen from your organizers on the ground, your activist citizenry. In terms of the specifics, what I can generally provide is an outline to what type of pathways have worked and would work today if done again, and things that people could organize around as a guideline for a viable resistance to the Great Reset death cults, right? So that's generally my approach. I know that one of the wild cards in this whole process is in the private business sector, the entrepreneurs, people who sometimes, in some cases, like I brought up the case of SNC-Lavalin, you know, there's Caterpillar, there's Total in France. There's a lot of industrialists who may have played the game and played a dirty game over the past 50 years in some cases. You know, like the globalization since the early 70s especially was wired to be a really sort of free-for-all frontier of rapaciousness. And so, you know, it was hard to not get your hands dirty, not to do bribes, not to participate or look the other way with things that you knew were bad going on. Point being, not everyone lost their soul. And a lot of the private business class understands that when Mark Carney comes out or Chrystia Freeland comes out saying that for those businesses that rewire their entire business model to accommodate the decarbonization post-Great Reset age, they will be rewarded handsomely. And for those who don't, they will cease to exist. And they're talking, who are they talking to? They're talking to the industrialists. They're talking to the dirty corporations that are that increase our carbon footprint, and that are out of whack with Agenda 2030. Right. So these are people now who recognize that they're set up to be destroyed. They have no role to play. Their companies, what they do as construction firms in the Great Reset age, which is supposed to be an age of depopulation, where we only allow for construction of things like windmills. Solar panels are permitted. Nuclear energy is not. Like, that's what Russia is going. The Russians, they just had an Africa-Russia summit.
Right.
They had representation from 49 African leaders, African countries, 17 African heads of state were there. And they signed deals. They met with the Rosatom, the head of the Russian Atomic Energy Agency, right, which has been working to help Africa do what they've been told they're not allowed to do for decades and decades under imperialism, which is use nuclear power, have hydrocarbons, but have nuclear power, go for third, fourth generation. China's also helping them with that. The West has said no. So, you know, if we actually cared about, and this is where, if you look at it, Macron was dragged by his collar to China. He wasn't dragged by the technocrats running Paris. He was dragged by the executives at Total, at, you know, the Airbus, the biggest, you know, airplane production manufacturer, aerospace technology. They're the ones who said, look, we're being sabotaged by the shutdown of fossil fuels, hydrocarbon fuels, by the U.S. destruction of Nord Stream 2, Nord Stream 1, all of this stuff. We are the ones being destroyed. Our people are going to be killed. Our companies will cease to exist unless you can figure out a way. And they dragged him. He had like a 50-person business delegation that went with him to Beijing. And basically, they were just apologizing, saying, please, 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 we're sorry. Give us another chance. And they signed tons of business contracts with China to try to save them from the crap that they got themselves stuck into. So that's something which is outside of the technocrats. Most people are not aware of the role. I mean, the reason why Trump was able to be victorious in 2016 and the reason why I think that there's a viable fight, even though it's kind of confused, is because there's a robust patriotic business community, people who have some abundance, some wealth, and they know that they're sitting on the precipice of a systemic breakdown in dark age. And they're putting it in, both partially to save their own asses, but partially because they're patriots who care about their countries.
Right.
And it's not. And I think there's a lot of threats in the back rooms right now to try to pressure people who have that type of business clout to not participate in sort of Belt and Road type projects overseas or in their own country. So I think there's threats. There's probably a lot going on that we just will never know about. But that's a real thing. I mean, that's also in Japan. Right. A big part of the Japanese industrialists, too, were organizing around Shinzo Abe, who was making deals with the Russians and the Chinese to get Japan out of becoming a new Ukraine of the Pacific, as some would like it to be, where they will be annihilated like the Ukrainians have been annihilated as a U.S. proxy for a war with China and Russia. And right. Shinzo Abe was doing deals. He had a foot in the door. He's kind of like a Trump-like figure. And he was working with the business community with his contacts in all over the world. And they had to kill him because
he's not the only one. They just killed the guy from Ecuador. I mean, but the truth is that we're watching this in real time. And what you're saying, I think, is so important, as usual, is that there are a lot of entrepreneurs, industrialists, billionaires in America that aren't engaged. The very bizarre thing that we've learned over this last 3 years of traveling the country is that the billionaires on the left, which are globalists, they're not really on the left, in my opinion. They're the billionaire oligarch elitists. They're on both sides. But it does appear a lot of patriots are sitting on the sidelines. The billionaire patriots are kind of like, you know, waiting it out. I think now is the time that they jump in and they say, you know what? What's going on in Africa? What's going on here? How can we? Because this is Larry Fink's model was going direct, in my opinion, when he announced that in 2019 and the ESG score and everything, BlackRock, Vanguard and all their controlled media and controlled politicians all went head first. But there's another group, like you're saying, there are patriots that are industrialists that could also right now at this time look for opportunities to help America and help us in our relationship with the rest of the world. Because like you said, people do say, oh, you're defending China, or you're defending Russia, or you're defending this. No. Just look at what they're doing that makes sense for them. And we're not doing that. And we should be, I think.
Yes.
You have to go, but last words on that.
No, I exactly. I mean, now is the time for action. I mean, at the end of the day, the system is going to come down. There are authentic capital. This is what I always say. You know, there's authentic capitalists, people who actually want to create capital, which is the definition of capitalism, right? They want to create entrepreneurship, create private investment. That's fine, but it involves creating capital, leaping outside of the limits to growth. That's good business. Then you have the feudal capitalists who use capitalism only as a cloak to masquerade or to hide their feudalism, which they will use the control of money as a weapon to destroy real capitalism. So the BlackRocks, the Vanguards, the George Soroses, the a lot of the creeps at the higher echelon summits at Bilderberger, they act like, you know, they're capitalists. Maurice Strong, he was the CEO of Petro-Canada and you know, like a bunch of mining companies. Did this guy, he devoted his life to shutting down and destroying mining and hydrocarbons, but he was the CEO of Petro-Canada. Well, it's because he was always there as a Malthusian death cultist with an idealized sense of what feudalism should be, which requires the destruction of industrial civilization, and they will use their control of money to do it. Very, very closed system. The open system is the only way to go. And I was bringing up the Akosombo Dam in Ghana that Kennedy had built. And to this day, there's a plaque honoring the memory of JFK. That was done by the anti-JP Morgan Steel Trusts, Steel Combine in America, who were patriots working with Kaiser Steel. That was actually the patriotic groupings that controlled the steel production of America and were enemies of the JP Morgan United Steel operation that was always trying to jack up artificially the price of steel to make building projects in America and overseas more and more economically unviable. And JFK had to go to war with these guys, forcing them to make their prices reasonable for steel based upon what the markets actually demanded. Like, he's like, look, like you're artificially screwing around. You're disobeying the very free markets that you say you love so much. You're artificially destroying that, which is going to cripple your own business, and your own shareholders are not going to benefit. And so the point of national government of JFK, of Benjamin Franklin, was to use the power of government, not as a communist state, but to use the government to create an environment that would make it viable to do honest business and build large scale, long term projects. And honestly, it doesn't mean that you're doing everything with the government. Like in NASA, it was 90% of the action that went into everything that went into, you know, the NASA program, all the way up until 1979, when everything was canceled, was the private sector and private contractors. But the environment was created by the will and commitment by the nation to get a job done. And that's the way that a healthy private public partnership is supposed to work. But you don't let private finance define the policies of a nation. That the private finance must always be held accountable to the representatives of the people, and the people, which is the government. We are the government. It's not something different. And in the evil version of corporatist feudal capitalism, it's an evil PPP, a public private partnership, where the private capital defines what the nation is allowed to do and uses the nation as an instrument for the private financiers with their trusts and their you know, old money tied to the Banks of England and you know, these fondies that go back to the days of the Roman Empire. It's a very different idea and philosophy of government. So yeah, I mean, this is what people should be thinking about and definitely organizing for, bringing back constitutional American banking now before the collapse. Is now's a good time to do it.
Yeah, and we can do it. And that's the thing. People can do it. They have to, just with everything else, like we're talking about local government, local this, local that. Get off your couch, stop waiting for somebody else to do it, especially if you do have this. There's lots of opportunity right now to get involved, I feel like, all over the world, to save not just our nation, but to be part of the solution for the world. And these people, that these great resetters, the Davos crew, the people at the very top, they don't care about you. But if you care about humanity and the future for all of us, there's so much you can do if you have resources right now. And you should be looking for that and looking how to reinvest in this country and the world, because I believe that in the end, there will be a lot of struggle and strife. But I still believe that your thoughts and a lot of the work you do on the other side will benefit humanity. But we all got to jump in now, especially if you have the resources and the infrastructure to do that. As always, Matt Arett has amazing books. The Clash of the Two Americas is one of the best series out there. Especially, I always recommend this to people that have college age children or children that are in grad school, because they did not learn anything about history likely. And his book really is absolutely readable. It reads like fiction, and it's not. So I highly recommend Matt Arett's work, his Substack as well. Where else can people find you, my friend?
Yeah, if they want to get the books, go to CanadianPatriot.org. Substack, like you said, that's a useful way to keep up to date. My books were written by my wife as well, and she's got a book on the dark origins of international fascism going back to the 19th century. So that's something available also on the website. Last one, RisingTideFoundation.net, for a lot more of the educational stuff. A lot of homeschoolers might benefit by that content. So there's a lot there. But thank you, Mel. It's always a great pleasure. Yeah, I love your moral righteous fire. It's always good. Okay.
But because everyone was asking for so long when Matt Arett was coming back, and we had a little time here, and I was like, come back, and then we're back on track. And we're gonna have Cynthia too, and we're gonna talk about a lot of great things with her, because she's equally brilliant and awesome. Thank you so much, Matt Arett. All the links are below. I will see you next week, and we'll get back on track regularly. Thank you for all the work you do. It is phenomenal, and you are everywhere. And I know how much you care about humanity and our future. So really appreciate you.
Thank you, Mel. Bye. Thanks.
I don't know about you, but I feel a lot better being prepared for whatever's coming. Every day I hear something new. Something's coming from the CDC. Something's coming from the FDA. Who's trying to take over our healthcare system? All this craziness. And what I know is that one man really changed my life, how I look at everything that's happening to me health-wise, and that was Dr. Zelenko. He was a good friend of mine, a good friend of the show, and he came up with the most amazing product. Z-Stack has been a game changer for us. We have not been sick since we've been on it. We take it regularly. We feel like we're coming down with something, we'll double up. But he has all new products over at the website. God rest his soul. He did not leave us unprepared. And that is very important for you to prepare. So he's got Z Shield. He's got a Kid Z Stack, which is awesome. He's got Z Flu, Z Detox. He's got all kinds of things. He always said to me, your immune system must be clean, resilient, and resistant. This matters the most. And what I can say on top of that is that he supported me. He supported free speech. He supported medical freedom. He supported personal liberty and everything that I believe in, he believed in. He inspired me to be myself, to speak up, to speak out. And what matters is that you are feeling healthy, whole, clean, clear, focused, and that your immune system is protected from anything that comes our way. And Z-Stack is the best way to do that. Please stock up on Z-Stack. Go to themelkshow.com. go to our partners page, goes down to Z-Stack. That also supports the show. When you buy from our partners, these great people, especially Dr. Zelenko, who is dear to me, you are supporting the show and keeping us going. And I know that truth, freedom, and the First Amendment matter to you. They matter to him. They matter to me. So make sure you're always healthy. You're always out there. You're always standing up. Be brave. Courage is contagious.